No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Tonight, we have a special guest who I believe is one of the youngest guests we've ever had, Daniel Lewis. Daniel is a new D.C. statehood advocate who was inspired by John Oliver to get involved in our struggle to become equal in the District of Columbia by becoming the 51st state. So tonight we're going to talk to Daniel, find out why he's motivated to get involved and what he's doing and how we can help. And he, I believe we also have his lovely sister Tessa with us, who is also involved. So stay tuned and get ready to call in and join in the conversation. Again, the number is 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Before I get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who I understand is cooking Mexican food in Kansas City to feed the hungry. Are you there, Chef Gomez?
Yes, I am. Yes, I actually, because, you know, I volunteered to do Mexican food, and then there was a vegetarian, and then somebody was like allergic to the cheese. So I ended up coming up with like 8 dishes. It was unbelievable. I couldn't even believe I did it. And I'm in recovery now and probably, you know, not going to have Mexican food for at least a week or two.
Well, I know that's hard.
You know, I had to educate. There's a great Mexican community. I went in and got, you know, pan dulce, which is the Mexican, you know, like dessert breads, and it was just like going into, you know, on at home when I go into AP Agua Prieta, and so it was incredible. And these people had never had really homemade Mexican food, so it was fun. Yes, I am a chef among many other things.
Well, I know you're many other things, but we can't talk about that because we got young people on the show today.
Okay, we gotta keep it clean.
But before we start, let me just give you a rundown, an update on what's going on in Washington. No new co-sponsors of the New Columbia Emissions Act, the statehood bill, since Congress is on recess. But it's a sad day here in the district. We lost a great statehood hero, Julian Bond, who was 75 years old, passed away yesterday. He's a longtime civil rights activist. He was co-founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, president of the NAACP, two-time elected House member from Georgia. I know that you and I both knew him, Kathleen, because he was from Georgia and a favorite of President Carter's. I saw him, my wife and I saw him at a dinner last year and sat down and talked to him and his wife. But among other things, he was a great statehood advocate, a dear, dear friend of our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and we're all going to miss him in the statehood movement. He was an incredible force for civil rights, for everybody's rights. He stood up for marriage equality and for gay people at a time when a lot of African-American ministers did not stand up for marriage equality. So he was a groundbreaker and really an incredible guy, and we're going to miss him.
And what a great, really a kind guy. He was a really kind man, and you don't find that too much these days. So it is really sad that he passed away. We're going to really miss him. And then yet it's encouraging because we have two young people who are kind of taking, you know, as he passes the torch in a way, at least there's the youth that is getting involved in it. And we're very encouraged because these Daniel Lewis is probably, I think he's a graduate, high school graduate from Georgetown Day School, and he's got to be, what, 18, 19? But it's great to see this youth kind of get involved in it and not be part of the millennials who are just completely not involved. So with that, I want to introduce our guest today, which is Daniel Lewis. And as I said, graduate recently of Georgetown Day School. And he has started an organization called Disrupt DC. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Really good. Really, it's really great to talk to you. I'm really excited to hear about, you know, this organization. Can you tell us a little bit what Disrupt DC is about?
So Disrupt DC is a group we started about under a week ago that's already making lots of news, which is awesome. And pretty much the idea is to have young people, college and high school students, try to reach out to the young constituents that everyone wants to get to. And it's something that has been seemingly, as you said, inaccessible for a lot of people who have been the leads of the state-owned movement, where lots of millennials are just inactive in this issue. And we see as if we've grown up the same way these kids have grown up, we should be able to connect with them. We should be able to know what will get them to want to do something, get them activated, get them angry about this issue. And that's our hope. That's our goal for this organization, to get a huge base of college students and high school students, which is over an eighth of the population of the District of Columbia, but eventually use that to spread out through into the country and convince the rest of the nation that this is something that must be done.
Well, you know, Daniel, it's we were just talking there about Julian Bond, and one of the things that Julian Bond did was he was a co-founder of SNCC, which was the student movement. You probably know this, during the civil rights movement. It was one of the most powerful groups in the civil rights movement, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and really great people came out of it, like him and Eleanor Holmes Norton and John Lewis and many other civil rights leaders. So young people have always been part of the civil rights movement, but you're very right in pointing out that they've been missing from the statehood movement. What are your feelings about that? You got any idea why we haven't been able to get young people motivated? When we have a rally, we have a lot of old people and we have a lot of children. I mean, you know,
children are probably dragged there by their parents and everything.
But yeah. Nobody in the middle.
Yeah. And there are a lot of issues. And the biggest ones that I see are one is that it doesn't seem pressing. We saw issues with Eric Garner and with things like that where there was an immediate outcry. There was something that everyone could latch onto and people could across the country could relate to. And from that, everyone just flipped out and rushed to the streets. This is something that's ongoing. It's not immediate. It's not something that smacks you in the face. It's something you gradually come to realize is an injustice. And it's much harder for especially kids in a mindset of a teenager or a young adult to sort of look into that aspect of things, looking into the future, into the long term, rather than just saying, this is an injustice happening right now, and I need to do something about it. I need to get angry about it. There has not been a successful push to move people from mildly annoyed or mildly disappointed that they lack representation to flipping pissed off that they lack representation. And that push needs to come. And it might become a shove in the end, but it needs to be the way to do it is not straightforward. That's what we're experimenting with. How can we get kids to actually be angry? Once they get angry, once that huge base is angry, I mean, they're pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah, I agree.
I definitely agree. I mean, the other thing that you guys have with that is such an advantage to your youth is the fact that you know how to use social media and that's the way that you guys can connect. And, you know, I must say I'm pretty hip in the social media thing for an old stooge, but most people don't know how to use it to get the message out. And with you guys, that's like second nature. That's like breathing. So, you know, your ability, do you feel that you're going to be successful in using social media, that's how you can get that spark to kind of get lit?
Yeah, I mean, our first thing we did, we sat down, had lunch with our four members or founders, and the thing we immediately did was go sit at the National Gallery of Art in the courtroom and or the big center room in the middle, and just made a Facebook account, made a Twitter account, and started getting ready, started getting connected to people, because the whole idea that we're working with is, you build almost a name for this movement, and people have used, there's DC Vote, of course, there's DC State Vote, and they're wonderful, they do wonderful things, but you have to build a name that is, the people of our generation will latch onto, will recognize, and once that name gets recognition, you do something that shows that teenagers can really make a difference, that this isn't just an impossible problem that we can't achieve any change by doing whatever we can do. Once you get past that point, then teenagers start to say, "Oh, maybe I can do something," and they'll start to join. They'll start to see. They'll start to use your hashtags and do whatever you need them to do on social media, and you hope the avalanche goes from there.
Can I ask you, Senator Brown? I'm sorry, just so I can get this. Do you guys already have a hashtag? Is it hashtag DisruptDC?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so use that, people out there. And first of all, let me point out to my colleague, so plugged in, that hip is a word that hasn't been used in about 30 years, okay? So,
it's coming back. So it's retro,
you're
man.
Hip.
It's called Throwback Thursday, Friday, Sunday.
Hip.
Hey,
hip,
I'm still hip.
Yeah, hip at our age means replacement, honey. But yeah, I think it's great that you guys are getting involved, and I think it's, you know, that's what you really bring to the table is this social media thing, and it's funny because that's what first inspired you, right? Why the John Oliver thing? You seem like a smart young man, and obviously you've known that we haven't had representation for a long time. So what was it about John Oliver that motivated you to get out there?
Well, I would say it's two things. One, it's the fact that from this video, it's probably over 2 million views now, you know there's momentum behind it. You know that he has a viewership, he has a base that's going to be watching this, and that probably 95% of them are going to agree with him. And they're going to be activated, but they're going to be pissed off. And it's not necessarily that they'll do anything about it, but now they'll be educated. And when you have that base, we saw an image that there's momentum there. There's something we could work off of. The other thing that he does very well, and that I think we want to do as well, is you have to present it very simply, plainly, and with a comedic and fun aspect. Once you do that, you can relate to almost anyone. When there's humor, when there's something that relates to you, it's very easy for you to understand. There's no complex politics then. It's a simple moral issue. It's a simple should they be represented or should they not? And when he puts it like that, and he puts it in his poignant and funny manner, he has all his little tidbits and things that make it come to life. It energizes you and really makes you want to do something. And that is what charged us. It is interesting because even for me, I was probably in that same position of I'm just mildly annoyed that this is a problem, but I don't feel like I can do anything. Now we know we can do something, and that's what we're working with.
Well, and you know, Mark Twain once said that in the face of laughter, no injustice can stand. So I believe that too. I believe that. And as you said, Daniel, you know, it really does simplify the issue. People need to realize that this is ridiculous. This is the no taxation without representation is the principle on which our nation was founded. So it is terribly ironic. Maybe it's not funny, but it's terribly ironic that 240 years later, we're still fighting this battle in D.C. And it's amazing to me the kind of response that this piece has gotten. It really, really has, as you say, over 2 million views. It's just amazing because we bust our rear end every day to get this out there. And this guy has done more in 18 minutes than we've been able to do in years.
Let me ask you this, because getting back to how people can kind of follow you and everything, is your Facebook page, do you have a name for that yet?
Yeah, so our Facebook page is also Disrupt DC. Our Twitter is DC Disruptors, and we're going to give out updates about the event, and we're going to show everyone how awesome this is, because it's going to be great. But at the moment, we're just trying to mobilize people. We're trying to get more and more people excited.
Right, so we need to make sure that we make that like known, that you can follow you on Twitter at DC Disruptors. Is that what it
was?
Yes. Okay, so we need to follow you, and so we can get updated and use the hashtag DisruptDC, and then, of course, your Facebook page is DisruptDC too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Now, let me ask you something. You know, Senator Brown was saying that you guys are organizing a march, and that the march is actually going to be taking place in a curious place for someone outside of D.C., like myself, to understand. You're going to go to Ocean City, and can you tell us why Ocean City instead of, say, D.C.? Or,
well, so the plan right now is that we don't really consider this a march. This is more our starting block. We want to organize a couple cars of people to drive down to Ocean City. Ocean City is or within the district of Congressman Andy Harris, who's a congressman from Maryland, who has been a staunch dissenter to D.C. statehood. And the whole idea with this sort of thing is that, one, you go to the beach, which is never bad. If someone can get a fun free trip to the beach with new people, with friends, that's this aspect of, you incorporate something entertaining, something exciting that's going to actually make kids want to go more than just it being for the sake of good. And two, our plan is to actually educate the people there. So it's not preaching, it's not going to his house and then picketing in front of his house. It's showing his constituents what is wrong, what is actually going on, because most people are just walking around unawares. I mean, it's not something that they really would care about, or honestly, some people would say should care about. It's not affecting them. But we want to let them know that There is an injustice going on, as that is almost under the rug. And if his constituents know, eventually he's going to know, and he's going to actually either have to change his mind or feel the pain from whatever comes.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, there are people in D.C. right now that are supporting Mr. Harris. Congressman Harris is up for re-election next year, and there are people of course, he's up every 2 years, but there are people that are supporting the mayor of Ocean City, who happens to be a Democrat, to oppose him. And I think you're doing exactly the right thing. I think we need to get out there. You're right. 80% of America has been polled, and they don't understand that we don't have the same rights that they have. And you're also right that they don't have a dog in the fight. This is about equality and justice. It's not about what's going to happen to the people of Maryland or Virginia or North Dakota or Kansas. It's about doing the right thing. So you're right on both counts, and I think it's really important that you're going down there. And it's good that you're having fun. You know, today marks the 42nd anniversary of Woodstock, and that's what we thought social activism was when I was your age. I was 16 when Woodstock took place, and that's what we thought social activism was. It was getting around, sitting around with a bunch of people, listening to rock and roll music, and voicing our displeasure. But I think you guys are doing a better job by understanding that you really do have to be active.
We really want to emphasize is we're going to make this something simple and exciting. We don't want to present a complex political problem to these people. We just want to present, pretty much say, what if you were in this situation? What if you were without representation? If you had no say in the wars that you went into, the taxes imposed upon you, how would you feel? And then they might not even know by then you're talking about D.C., and then you break the glass and you say, well, we feel that every day. I mean, that's the kind of way I think, and we think you need to put it in this sort of simple but an uncomplicated manner that allows people to internalize it and relate to it. Because a lot of people can't. Like other movements that are countrywide or even worldwide, this one is very, very hard to relate to.
It is. It's very hard to relate to.
And I think you, yes.
When you have a situation in Ferguson where a young black man gets killed, African Americans all across America relate to that. All around the world, people that are oppressed relate to that, police brutality and the government. But when it comes to not having the right to have a voice in Congress, we're the only people that suffer that. So it is really, really hard for other people to relate to it. So you're right. You have to make it simple. You have to give them the right message. I'm sorry, Kathleen. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the same point. I think the problem is that nobody feels the pain that you got, that D.C. residents feel. And if you don't feel the pain, you can't really, you know, identify with it. But I think with education, and if they thought about those two points that you just brought up, you have no voice in the wars that you have to go and participate in, and D.C. residents do in quite high numbers, and that you pay taxes without having a voice, I think they will understand that once they realize this actually is happening in their own, you know, country of the United States, which is the leader of democracy and the only capital in the world that, you know, that the nation treats the capital residents like this. So I think it's just a lot of education, and I'm excited about what you're doing. I think this is great.
Oh, yeah, we can't wait. I mean, it's going to be awesome. And the hope is that this is just the starting point. It's going to keep building once people see – once we go to a place like this and people see videos on all forms of social media of their friends, of kids their age actually doing something to make a difference, and – It's not like things are going to change overnight, but it's just that relation in your mind, and you see, I could be doing that. I can see someone sitting in the room on Facebook scrolling and just see a kid who's talking to someone about D.C. statehood and actually getting something done with it, and they get activated. I mean, you get excited. You feel like you can be a part of this movement, and that's something all teenagers want to be, and that's what we're hoping to hone in on, and we will hone in on that.
Well, and you know what? I think that my experience as when I was an anti-war activist, when I was your age in the middle of the Vietnam War, and we used to go down to the mall and protest, we went with young people. I've realized that at 62 years old, I can only motivate people your age so much. It was true in the war movement when we went with people our own age. It also meant something to us because we were just about draft age when we all got involved and there was this terrible war going on. So I think you're right that the leader of this group, and it's an important group, needs to be a young person. And I hope that person is you. You sound like you've got it all going on, young man, and I think you made a really good start here. Let me ask you a question. Does your sister? I went to a meeting with our.
There she is, Tessa.
Hi, Tessa. Hi. You didn't get to say much the other day. We were in a meeting with Eleanor Holmes Norton, and unfortunately, Senator Brown and your brother talked too much, so you didn't get to say a whole lot. What do you want to say? Because I'm really interested. And tell us a little bit about you. Are you still in high school?
Yes, I'm going to be a sophomore.
And where are you at Georgetown Day also?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So tell us why you're involved.
Pardon?
Tell us why you're involved. Did you get involved because Daniel threatened you or
No, we did it. We did it together. It was a decision. I mean, why not? It's something that I live in D.C. and I have a couple more years here. And it's there's no reason not to be. It's something good. I believe in, obviously, and yeah.
Good. We need guys like you guys involved. We need people like you involved, and the younger, the better. We used to have a group called Young Suffragists, actually, which was a group run by moms of kids who were in the second, third, and fourth grade. Of course, they've all grown up now, but they were very effective because when an 8-year-old stands there in front of the White House and says to you, "Hey, man, this sucks," you really get the message. You know, you go, "Yeah, she's right."
And let me tell you, another thing, when I was in New York City and I brought, I think the age group was from 8 to to about 11 up to lobby in Albany for class sizes and, you know, PE. And Jim, and let me tell you, politicians can say no to young adults and adults. It's very difficult to look into the face of a young person and tell them, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have time to even listen to you. So you guys have a big advantage in that, you know, no matter what, the young always pulls on politicians' heart. It's maybe that little piece left in their heart that they can identify. And when they see youth actually start participating, you know, it's hard for them not to pay attention. So you guys have a real extra kind of like, you know, thing going for you there. And I'm just so excited to hear that you guys want to take up the cause and get it out there and get your friends to join and you know, geez, you know, run with it. This is great.
Yeah, we're hoping to use that to its full advantage, that those heartstrings we can pull on.
Exactly.
And let me throw this out to Tessa, because I put 3 kids to GC Public Schools. I know you guys all have to do community service, and there's plenty of community service credits out there for people that want to get involved with this. You know, we use high school students and college students and as interns, and they get community service credit for it. So if you guys can organize rallies and other things, we can make sure that you get community service for that.
Yeah, that would also help get well. But I think a thing that gets a lot of college students out is college students are always just trying to find a way to like put their stamp on the, you know, what they've done, and you know, not just leave and know they've done something. So that would be a way to get a lot of people out, and then have community service hours for a lot of high school students are for ways to do that. That would be great.
Yeah, well, thanks for your effort. And you guys, now, how do I, if I want to come, if I'm in high school or college and I want to come to Ocean City with you, how do I get there?
So we'll be leaving this Wednesday at 9:30 from Freedom Plaza, getting to Ocean City around noon and getting back here around 8 or 9. People are welcome to meet us there if they want, but we'll have 2 or 3 drivers taking their cars. Fill in those cars with people, flyers, and posters, and heading down there at 9:30 in the morning. Just enough time to get plenty of sleep and get energized for what's going to be an awesome day.
All right. Well, it sounds great, and we encourage everybody to do that. Is there a way that they can go onto your website and get details, or, you know, we want to make sure everybody that wants
Facebook
to go gets to go?
Yeah, so if they go to our Facebook page, which is Disrupt DC, one of the big posts there will be first the Washington Post article that's been on this whole event and this whole organization, and then the second one is our event page, and we'll be doing some more publicity with that in the upcoming days.
And listen, we want you to come back and tell us about what happened and how the movement is going, you know, in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to be sure that we get and follow you on your Twitter account and your Facebook. And do you have an Instagram account too?
Not yet.
But we'll definitely be getting one of those for the trip.
Okay, great. That's going to be fantastic.
Well,
so I'll make
sure
that Senator Brown is able to follow you guys.
Awesome.
Yeah, because she's hip, guys, so you can count on her. But I'm going to try to get I'll try to get down to the Wilson Building to say goodbye to you guys on Wednesday morning. Unfortunately, I can't accompany you to Ocean City for 2 reasons. One, I've got 2 meetings that day. And 2, I would only be hanging out at the Thrasher's French Fry stand and the Fisher's Popcorn stand anyway. It would be hard to get me to move away from those 2 places. But we so... I'm sorry?
It'll be good to have a send-off from you.
Okay, and I'll get you some posters and stuff, and we'll get them down to you. And look, guys, we can't thank you enough. So, Daniel and Tessa, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for being on our show today. We hope you'll come back in a couple of weeks when you've done this and tell us how it went. I'm sure you have a great time, and we really appreciate you guys being involved, because I've been doing this for 8.5 years as an elected official, and I can tell you, you really are the missing element. Young people, we really need to get young people involved and energized, so it's great to see that We've gotten two such great people involved, people that seem highly motivated, and you guys really give me great faith in the future of our movement. Anything else you want to say, Kathleen?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Brown. I just want to let you know that you've kind of re-energized us, because it's hard to do this, you know, week after week and to see the same faces. So the fact that there's this whole new possibility of a critical mass happening of young people, I mean, it just really is inspiring for us. So you kind of give us a little bit more of a kickstart to be enthusiastic and to realize that, you know, that, hey, we're somehow it's getting through, and that's all we need to know. And let's just all work together. So thank you guys.
We're glad we can help.
Thank you guys.
All right. Have a great trip and drive safely, because that's always important and we care about you. And right now we're going to take a little break as we transition, and we're going to play a song by John Mayer in honor of our two guests today. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Back, and we were just talking to our political guru Don at BBS Radio in during the break about who should be running for president these days. He thinks Kathleen. I'm not so sure that she wants to do it, though. What do you think, Kathleen?
No, I can't do it. I want to shake things up, but at the local level, I could never do that stuff. I mean, I really kind of think. And in talking about this, let's talk about Donald Trump, right? And I'm amazed how people are really, even after all the crappy things he says, and how he's obviously not a nice person to even work for, his regard of everyone, he's got such an ego that people would rather have him than the rest. And even though he's gone bankrupt four times, been bailed out by the government, is part of the problem. I mean, he gives to any politician that he can. He's not a solution, but because he's a loudmouth and doesn't need money, can say what he wants, and is not politically correct, they all want him.
Well, we're going to put that thought on hold for a minute, because we've got Kim from Sacramento on line one. Are you with us, Kim?
Yes.
Do you have a question? Or a comment?
No, I'm just wanting to listen in and hear what is being said.
Oh, good. Okay. Oh, that's great.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Do you have a preference for president these days?
I don't. I think they're all the same, so it's kind of hard to.
It's kind of hard. So would you be for like a Donald Trump who's people perceive is going to shake things up?
Well, I think it's better to I don't know if I'm for him specifically, but I think that we do need a big change. We need a big change in a lot of ways. So I think shaking things up might not be such a bad idea at this point. And it
I think a lot of people have that sentiment, Kim. I think that, you know, you're certainly not alone. And it explains why he's doing so well. And also, I think, Kathleen, it explains why Bernie Sanders is doing well. I think because although he's about as far away from Donald Trump as you can get, he's also somebody that's outside the box. Huh? What do you think about that?
Well, the other thing I want to ask him, and I think I get this feeling everywhere I go, and I'm almost – I am the same way. Are you just tired of all the political correctness that has kind of overshadowed everything in the last, you know, years of politics?
Well, I think it goes beyond that. I guess I see that there is just a big kind of game being played, and that in reality, I think that there is nobody. People are looking at this and they're being distracted by all of these you know, this person versus that person, but they're not really looking at the bigger picture of who's really controlling, like, our government. And I think that's one of the big problems, is that we're not really looking at the people really pulling the strings, and the bankers and the, you know, the big money people and things like that. So, and the, just the big overall corruptness of this government, and not just this government, but our whole world. You know, there's just big agendas that are happening that people are not, they're being so distracted by, you know, by the politics, and that they're not even paying attention to the real picture. So that's my feeling.
Well, and you know what, Kim, that's one of the oldest modus operandi, I think, in politics, is that we want to purposefully distract you from what's going on by having you get involved in the petty politics and the personalities and the other things. I think that's a real, you know, an agenda within itself, that we push things like personality, because we don't want you focusing on the larger picture of people that put millions and millions of dollars into politics. Kathleen and I both have worked in politics for many, many years. And you correct me if I'm wrong here, Kathleen, but I think the single most important thing you could do to reform our political system is to get the money out of it, to make elections either supported by the public, or but to get the big money out of it. Big unions, big companies, big corporations, they don't put millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars into politics because they don't expect a return. They do expect a return, and they get a return on their money, and it's terrible.
Well, Kim, you're in California. Let me kind of ask you a totally different question. You know, our show is a lot about D.C. not being a state and citizens not having representation in decisions like war and their money being spent in the taxes that they pay. Are you kind of aware of that, or did you – I mean, was that what intrigued you to the show, to learn more about that issue, or do you have any kind of opinion about it?
About, you mean about what's happening in Washington, D.C. and the fact that
right, that they're not a state and that they don't have a voice?
To be quite honest, I've stumbled on this show accidentally a little bit. Mm-hmm. I apologize. But in answer to your question, I think that, I don't even know how to say it, but it's almost like representation doesn't matter. So in some ways, yes, if it were a real government, so to speak, in normal terms, where they were really working for the people, I would say absolutely it would be a different thing for you not to have representation. However, the way things are, it really is it's such a scam right now, and the fact. Well, what I've learned recently is that we don't even really have a government. I mean, these are all corporations. Each of our states are corporations, our cities, our counties, our libraries, you know, the federal government. They are actually listed on Dun & Bradstreet. And so, and we think that they're governments because, you know, we expect that this is what is, you know, they're working on our behalf. But when you realize that they are corporations, then it all makes sense. Then you understand why they're doing what they're doing, and it's we're just the people who don't understand, and we are fooled because we think that they're looking after our best interests, that they're working with us, that we have a voice or we have a say. And the reality is, none of that is true. It's just a smokescreen so that they can do business as usual, whatever their business is, and we get left hanging or holding the bag and or both. You know, we're not the priority. So it's that's just what I've begun to learn. And so it's not, you know, it's not good in California either. Believe me, we're under a pretend drought right now, where Northern California has been being turned almost like into a desert, and Southern California is just doing its own thing. you know, they're trying to take our water from Northern California. I mean, so there's a lot of stuff that happens even when you think you have representation, and doesn't always work that way.
Well, let me ask you something, Kim. First of all, let me tell you that people are Skyping in as they're listening to you, and they're agreeing with you. Let me tell you that you're not alone. There are comments out there that you understand what's going on. She has the key. They're seeing, wow, she's right, people are saying. So you're getting a lot of support out there. But let me ask you this question. How much impact do you think it has that we're not involved, that less than 50% of us vote in national elections? You know, you have countries like Australia where 98% of the people vote in national elections. We have less than 50% of the people in this country to vote. You think that plays a big role? Do you think that if we were more involved, the corporations and other people that you talk about would have less influence?
And that's a really good question. In some ways, yes, but also in some ways, I'm not sure, because, well, you know, it doesn't seem to matter what the voting is. I mean, this is what I've seen, and it may be that it's also being falsified. I'm not sure. I can't prove that, but that may be maybe part of what's going on. But what I see is people are discouraged because it doesn't matter what you vote. It doesn't matter what you think. And I have worked on issues. I have been involved at a local level, state level, federal level on many, many issues. And I've, you know, been a community leader as well. So it's not for lack of trying that I speak. And, you know, I mean, I've been at hearings at our state. You know, we're in the capital here in California, and it's just, you realize it does not matter. I mean, a case in point is the whole vaccine issue here in California. I don't know, but there was a bill, SB 277, that recently got passed in the last couple month or month and a half by our legislature here, forcing, mandating children that go through the public schools to have vaccinations. And whether or not you are for vaccinations, the point is that people are being denied choice over and over and over again. And I happened to go to just kind of witness some of the hearings and things. And oh my gosh, there were packed. It was a packed house of children and parents, and I mean, we're talking about 2,000 to 3,000 people at some of the hearings. They absolutely, absolutely just totally disregarded anything. So I know that's a slightly different take on the voting issue, but even voting people in, it seems like when there are good people that get in, they get corrupted immediately, or they get scared, or they get intimidated, or I don't know what happens, but or they're a lone voice. I don't know, but it doesn't seem to make a difference.
But after 35 years in politics, Kim, I would say that everything you just said is what happens. Some of them get intimidated. Some of them get corrupted. Some of them are a lone voice in the wilderness. I think all those things happen. We've seen good people. Kathleen and I have both seen good people that have gotten corrupted, and we've seen people that have just given up. We've seen, you know, and gone on to other things and said, this is too hard and we can't make a difference. So it really is a dilemma for us. I'm sorry, Kathleen, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it is really getting more and more difficult to be optimistic, but I still have hope that the only way you're going to make change is at the very, very local level. Now, Senator Brown and I were talking about this earlier in the discussion, is the only way I think to change is by getting involved in your school board, you know, the city council, the county supervisor. But then again, it's very true, when they get elected, you know, I don't know, maybe if it's the decisions you have to make, but But I guess you have to stay involved. In other words, if that person you elected is not doing what you want, it's still up to you, the citizen, to vote someone else in. And I think that's the thing about the United States. I mean, I tell this a lot, and I mentioned it in my ex who was from Croatia, where they had absolutely no rights. Croatians couldn't be school teachers, couldn't be bus drivers. They salivate. I mean, when they could vote, once, you know, the whole thing with the war happened and they could actually go to the polls and vote, it was the most, the highest honor, the highest point of power for them. And I think in the United States, we're so lackadaisical, we're so entitled to what we think things should be, that we don't realize that this is, it means being involved to the last breath you take. You can't just sit back and just, you know, kind of not stay involved. And I think it's a lot of work. You know, it's easier to do other things. And as you know, when you're involved in causes, you see people come and they get involved and they get discouraged. And somehow we've got to get past that point where we're discouraged and we just fade out. We don't stay involved and we give up. And maybe it's just simple looking in your backyard and staying with it. Otherwise, I don't know what answers there will be or how we can make a change, but we have to try. Otherwise, what do we have left?
Well, and we've seen, and I feel your frustration, Kim, and I hope that you're somebody that remains involved, because you obviously, first of all, have a very good sense of what you're talking about, and second of all, we need people that care, whether they stumble upon our radio show or not. We need people that care to really be involved, and we have seen, although it's just as likely that one or two people can be overpowered, we've seen a handful of people do great things, like the woman that started Mothers Against Drunk Driving. You know, drunk driving laws were changed across America. Thousands of lives have been changed because of this woman's involvement. Or the woman that started Race for the Cure, where they've raised billions of dollars. She was actually from Texas. They raised billions of dollars for breast cancer research, and we've seen breast cancer survival rates go up. So people getting involved can make a change, but it's not easy. It's not easy, and I say that as somebody that was elected with 207,000 votes and have struggled for more than 200 years. My community has struggled just to be equal for more than 200 years. So we understand it's a tough hill to climb, but I hope you're involved and you stay involved. Can I ask you what you do, Kim?
I work for the state. I'm a environmental scientist. I do sustainability.
So. You must see, I mean, you know, yeah. Let me ask you a question, because everyone has been talking about, you know, the EPA, right? That the mine water that, you know, got let out to the river. And I used to work for Pat Schroeder, and I went around with the Colorado School of Mines, and we visited a lot of the old mining sites that have leached all this incredibly toxic water, and it's in pools, you know, and I guess they – do you think the EPA is underfunded? Do you think that there's just so many sites, you know, that were grandfathered and the companies didn't have to deal with the issue? And, I mean, I always got the impression there's just a lot of these places just kind of sitting there waiting for this kind of thing to happen. What do you think about it?
Well, I work from the state side. I'm not with federal government, so I'm not with federal EPA. But, you know, there's always things that can happen. I do work for the California Environmental Protection Agency, and I'm not calling on behalf of them.
Oh, no, we understand.
On behalf of my job. But, you know, I realize that there are lots of good people where I work, and sometimes there's, and I know that's the same with the EPA. I do know that there's a lot with federal EPA. I do know that there's a lot of things that happen that sometimes are accidental. And I don't know. I haven't had a chance to study that exact situation to know exactly what happened. And obviously, it's very new, so I don't know if anybody knows or it's not really clear. But sometimes I think, even like I think what's happening with our governments, where there's a lot of good people in government, but there's people pulling the strings way up high. I think that's the same with a lot of the agencies like EPA or FDA or USDA or whatever, where I think that sometimes they make a lot of decisions that are understandable, but I don't always think it's coming from the staff level. I think a lot of it is coming from appointed people or somehow much higher level. So I don't know what's happened in that specific situation, you know, what's happened with that spill. I know it's just a horrendous thing because I've seen a film, you know, in the last year that showed the whole river system of the Colorado River, where it started from its inception all the way down, where it goes out into the ocean. And, you know, to think that the contamination, you know, could conceivably go that far is pretty amazing. But, you know, so I think we're in pretty dire straits. But I do think that there's a lot of stuff that's being done, whether it being, you know, there's oil being sent through railroad cars. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's happening. I know through at least California, some of the parts of California. There's a lot of stuff that is being done that is irresponsible, and I'm not sure who all is responsible for doing it, but there is a lot of things that are being done. You know, the whole thing with Fukushima and the whole thing with our, you know, with the some of the nuclear power plants in California or just throughout the U.S., there's just a lot of irresponsible actions and management, and I don't even know how to explain it, but it's kind of mind-boggling that you think that people wouldn't pay more attention or really seem to be taking things seriously to make sure that there isn't this kind of accidents or this kind of endangerment of people's lives.
Well, I can tell you from being in politics for a long time, Kim, that people want to hear good news, you know, and unfortunately, that's one problem that we have. They don't want to hear that they need to keep an eye on these things. They want to hear that everything's all right, and that's a problem that we have sometimes. Is that you know, I was here in Washington D.C. Working in national politics when we had a lot of conservative people saying that global warming was a myth. That, this happens, it's cyclical, it's nothing to worry about. And people ate it up because that's what they love to hear. They love to hear that everything's going to be all right. So that's a problem, well, too.
Can I mention something that I've learned recently? I agree with you that people need to stay involved. And really, our government is a reflection of the people. Because
yes, it is.
If we were all involved and we're all involved, well, if other people were involved at the level I'm involved, I guess that I could even say that, probably, you know, a lot of this would not be happening. But, and of course, I would say that I think our society, at least in the U.S., has been set up so that people aren't involved. They're distracted by soccer games and you know, all sorts of entertainment and fast foods, and you know, and some of it is actually, you know, a lot of harmful stuff that I think that they are physically being impacted by a lot of the toxins that they're being exposed to through food and water and all sorts of things. Anyway, but I do agree, you know, I totally agree that the criticalness of staying involved. And one thing, though, I have been learning, and this is, I think, kind of, it is inspiring, that Canada, actually, they are starting, because they feel a lot, I guess apparently a lot of Canadians feel that they do not have a significant government that they want, that they can support. And so they are starting this new, I don't know if it's a new concept, actually going back to probably the old concept, the natural law and the common law, and they're starting people's assemblies. I believe they're going to actually start a number, even in September, where small groups of people are getting together, and they are starting to make their own laws and see where the the current governments are stepping on their natural rights and their rights as human beings. I guess you could say those were the rights that were noted in the Magna Carta or noted in our Constitution and the Bill of Rights and things. But those are rights that we have in our very essence and being of being alive and having been born. And so a lot of those rights are just stepped on and stepped on and stepped on. But we don't realize that as individuals, as people, that we have to be the ones to say, no, you're stepping over the boundaries. No, you've gone too far. Because the government really is under us. We have created that government, and they have to be responsible to us and accountable to us. Because, just like we can't be bigger than whatever created us, whether you want to think of the universe or God, or government can't be bigger than the people, or can't be more powerful than the people that created it. So the people do have to keep the government in reign, and it is their responsibility. So I do agree totally, and maybe it's time. Maybe we have to. Maybe here in the U.S. we have to go to people's assemblies too. Maybe we have to look at, what are the next steps for us as a country to really have an accountable government that works for the people, by the people, for the people, and of the people. I don't know how.
Well, I think you're right about that, Kim, and you've started a discussion which will take a whole nother show. So we're out of time, but I hope you'll come back and continue the discussion, because you've been a very interesting caller, and I think you've hit a lot of issues. I'm not sure that I agree with the People's Assembly thing, it's certainly something that we should talk about. And my friend and future presidential candidate, Kathleen Gomez, obviously agrees with you. But I hope you'll come back. We're out of time. And I hope – thank you so much for calling in. We were going to talk about several other things, but you've been such an interesting caller that I'm glad that we got a chance to hear what you had to say, and I hope you call us again. And America, thank you for listening. Kathleen and I will be back next week, and hopefully Kim will call in. Go ahead.
One quick thing. People have got to take the government back. On public assemblies, I'm all for it. Take it back, the government.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.